All right, we're looking at the life of Joseph. And tonight in chapter 41, there is going to be a dramatic reversal. Joseph is going to assume high office in Egypt. Let's look at the text. I'm going to be reading not the entire chapter, but the first half or so from the New Living Translation. It's a paraphrase. It reads smoothly, and I think you're welcome to follow along, or you can just listen either way. Genesis 41. Now, just as a reminder, where is Joseph, by the way, at the end of 40? He's in prison. Yeah. And he's been forgotten in prison. All right. 2 years later, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing on the bank of the Nile River. In his dream, 7 fat, healthy-looking cows suddenly came up out of the river and began grazing along its bank. Then 7 other cows came up from the river, but these were very ugly and gaunt. These cows went over and stood beside the fat cows. Then the thin, ugly cows ate the fat ones. At this point in the dream, Pharaoh woke up. Soon he fell asleep again and had a second dream. This time he saw 7 heads of grain on one stalk, with every kernel well-formed and plump. Then suddenly, 7 more heads appeared on the stalk, but these were shriveled and withered by the east wind. And these thin heads swallowed up the 7 plump, well-formed heads. Then Pharaoh woke up again and realized it was a dream. The next morning, as he thought about it, Pharaoh became very concerned as to what the dreams might mean. So he called for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt and told them about his dreams, but not one of them could suggest what they meant. Then the king's cupbearer spoke up. "Today I have been reminded of my failure," he said. "Some time ago you were angry with the chief baker and me, and you imprisoned us in the palace of the guard of the captain of the guard. One night, the chief baker and I each had a dream, and each dream had a meaning. We told the dreams to a young Hebrew man who was a servant of the captain of the guard. He told us what each of our dreams meant, and everything happened just as he said it would. I was restored to my position as cupbearer, and the chief baker was executed and impaled on a pole." Pharaoh sent for Joseph at once, and he was brought hastily from the dungeon. After a quick shave and change of clothes, he went in and stood in Pharaoh's presence. "I had a dream last night," Pharaoh told him, "and none of these men can tell me what it means, but I have heard that you can interpret dreams, and that is why I have called for you." "It is beyond my power to do this," Joseph replied, "but God will tell you what it means and will set you at ease." So Pharaoh told him the dream. "I was standing on the bank of the Nile River," he said. "Suddenly 7 fat, healthy-looking cows came up out of the river and began grazing along its bank. But then 7 other cows came up from the river. They were very thin and gaunt. In fact, I've never seen such ugly animals in all the land of Egypt. These thin, ugly cows ate up the 7 fat ones that had come out of the river first. But afterward, they were still as ugly and gaunt as before. And then I woke up. A little later, I had another dream. This time, there were 7 heads of grain on one stalk, and all 7 heads were plump and full. Then out of the same stalk came 7 withered heads shriveled by the east wind, and the withered heads swallowed up the plump ones. I told these dreams to my magicians, but not one of them could tell me what they mean." "Both dreams mean the same thing," Joseph told Pharaoh. "God was telling you what he is about to do. The 7 fat cows and the 7 plump heads of grain both represent 7 years of prosperity. The 7 thin, ugly cows and the 7 withered heads of grain represent 7 years of famine. This will happen just as I have described it, for God has shown you what he is about to do." The next 7 years will be a period of great prosperity throughout the land of Egypt, but afterward there will be 7 years of famine, so great that all the prosperity will be forgotten and wiped out. Famine will destroy the land. This famine will be so terrible that even the memory of the good years will be erased. As for having the dream twice, it means that the matter has been decreed by God and that He will make these events happen soon. My suggestion is that you find the wisest man in Egypt and put him in charge of a nationwide program. Let Pharaoh appoint officials over the land and let them collect 1/5 of all the crops during the 7 good years. Have them gather all the food and grain of these good years into the royal storehouses and store it away so there will be food in the cities. That way there will be enough to eat when the 7 years of famine come. Otherwise, disaster will surely strike the land and all the people will die. Verse 37. Joseph's suggestions were well received by Pharaoh and his advisors. As they discussed who should be appointed for the job, Pharaoh said, "Who could do it better than Joseph? For he is a man who is obviously filled with the Spirit of God." Turning to Joseph, Pharaoh said, "Since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, you are the wisest man in the land. I hereby appoint you to direct this project. You will manage my household and organize all my people. Only I will have a rank higher than yours." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh placed on his own signet ring on Joseph's finger as a symbol of his authority. He dressed him in beautiful clothing and placed the royal gold chain around his neck. Pharaoh also gave Joseph the chariot of his second in command, and wherever he went, the command was shouted, "Kneel down!" So Joseph was put in charge of all Egypt. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am the king, but no one will move a hand or a foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval." All right. The narrative of Genesis, focusing, it's character driven, and this section on Joseph is rich in detail. It's very vivid. The story of Joseph is well known. I suspect it's very familiar to you. You may even remember studying this and about Pharaoh's dreams in Sunday school. Or I suspect a lot of you maybe who taught Sunday school remember teaching. Maybe you had the flannel graph with the stalks of corn and the thin cows, the gaunt cows and the fat cows. Flannel graph, right? How many of you remember the fat flannel graph cows? Hey, wow, that's a lot of you. It's a familiar text. But, you know, that's okay. Let's move through it. Let's notice some of those details. And we're not going to cover all of 41 tonight. We'll pick it up next week. We'll finish 41 next week. But let's move through some of those details. Verses 1 through 8, Pharaoh's two dreams. The cupbearer is going to remember Joseph, verses 9 through 13. Joseph is going to be brought before Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh is going to tell his dreams. Joseph is going to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And then, after the interpretation, Joseph is going to give Pharaoh some bonus information. Here's some advice. Here's what I suggest. And then Joseph is going to lay out so brilliant a plan of preparation that it's a no-brainer for Pharaoh and his advisors to select Joseph himself to pioneer the campaign to save Egypt from impending disaster. And so it is in this chapter 41, where Joseph is going to go from prison to prime minister. Pretty dramatic reversal. Well, this is a key reversal chapter. The story moves from its low point. Just when we think Joseph is going to get a break and he's going to experience favor and success, He does, but it's usually in a limited fashion, and it's temporary, and then disaster strikes again. He's the favored son, and he ends up in a pit. He gains the trust of a high official in Egypt, and then he's falsely accused, and he ends up in prison. He does this great thing of interpreting their dreams of the baker and the cupbearer in the hopes that when the cupbearer goes, he'll be remembered. But then we learn, surprisingly, that the cupbearer forgets Joseph. And so for 2 years, Joseph languishes in prison. And so this is the low point. The beginning of 41 pictures a very dismal scene. It's almost like the screen fades. We see Joseph in prison, and the screen fades. There's dramatic music, and then in white lettering, 2 years later, you know, this time warp thing. Well, what happened during those 2 years? Well, he's in prison, and there he sat. There he was. The narrative focuses on Pharaoh. We've not had a focus on Pharaoh in the text, but here he is. We've noticed the high official and the baker and the cupbearer. We've had references, hey, there are higher ups in Egypt, but suddenly springing onto the stage of the unfolding drama is the top guy himself over all Egypt, Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And then we're introduced to a dilemma. The dilemma is in the form of a dream. The form of a dream. It's a deeply disturbing dream. The language of Genesis is quite vivid. His spirit was perturbed. He was very upset. He was rattled by this dream. This is a dream that shook him. The same expression will be used with Nebuchadnezzar and his baffling dream in Daniel chapter 2. It's the same Hebrew construction and expression that is utilized in Psalm 77, verse 5. I was so troubled that I cannot speak. So it imagines a deep, a profound state of distress, fear, anxiety, uncertainty. So we have the highest, most powerful man in Egypt, and there is a crisis. And the crisis is that he has these two dreams. And just as Joseph did in chapter 37, we have really one dream with two parts. Both parts have formal similarities. Behold, it's meant to be very dramatic in the description. The first dream, the Pharaoh sees seven filled out or fat fleshed cows coming up from the Nile, grazing in the reed beds by the river. They're followed by these seven emaciated or lean fleshed cows who proceed to devour the fatter cows. Second part, seven lush ears of grain sprouting from a single stalk. Sprouting near them were seven blighted ears of grain, swallowing their much healthier counterparts. No reason is given in the text as to why one set of cows is so frail, but we are informed that the shriveled ears of grain are in such a condition, it says, because of the east wind, the sirocco, the autumn spring withering wind that blows into Egypt from the south. Now, both dreams do have the element of the fantastic, right? Cows don't eat other cows. Ears of grain don't consume ears of grain. So there is a bizarre component to the dreams, undoubtedly contributing to the disturbed state that Pharaoh felt. The dreams are symbolic ones, of course. It's only natural that he would turn to his magicians or chief lector priest for explication. He knows enough to be disturbed, but not enough to be his own interpreter. In spite of all of his power and the resources at his disposal, he can find no one. He can find no information. There is no guide available to him to alleviate his anxiety and to give him any explanation whatsoever. And so you have lingering anxiety. The most powerful man one of the most powerful men on the earth at that planet, from a nationalistic perspective, is powerless to fix the crisis that he's in. The chief cupbearer, providence, right? The theme, one of the themes of Joseph's story, while waiting on his superior, overhears Pharaoh's conversation with his magicians and their inability to provide him with satisfactory dream interpretation. We don't know for sure whether the cupbearer deliberately forgot Joseph and now seizes an opportune moment to remember him and thus trying to ingratiate himself further with the Pharaoh, or whether he actually did forget about Joseph until this particular scene jogged his memory. Oh, I know someone that can interpret dreams. So the cupbearer tells Pharaoh about Joseph, and Joseph is prepared. Then preparations are made for him to go before Pharaoh. It's interesting, they mention a shave, and he takes off, he doffs his prison garb. And he gets ready to go in and sees a Pharaoh. We know that the Semites preferred to be bearded, whereas the Egyptians were clean-shaven. Joseph is going to look even more like an Egyptian than a Hebrew, even if he is a Hebrew lad. That's the word, the language of the cupbearer in verse 12. Joseph is not at all reticent to talk about God in the presence of the Pharaoh, who was considered to be a God incarnate. Joseph's not intimidated. The back and forth is quite interesting. Joseph begins with a modest denial. Oh, I can't do this. But then he's very quick to say, but my God can. He himself is not the answer to the Pharaoh's riddles. He identifies the only source and the cure for Pharaoh's apprehensions is God, Yahweh God. Joseph then plays something of the prophet. Not only will God answer Pharaoh, but that answer will be about Pharaoh's peace or prosperity. It is an interesting tone that struck multiple times by Joseph. And it's going to come also in the phrase in the text as he says to Pharaoh, God is showing you something that he, God, is about to do. God is giving you a preview of action he is going to take. And this is very much a prophetic tone, a prophetic voice that now enters into the dialogue, Joseph speaking confidently and authoritatively. Pharaoh, there's not a lot of, what are your credentials? How are you better than my magicians? How can I trust that you're going to tell? None of that. Pharaoh just launches immediately. He plunges into the narration of his dream and recounts the dream. Nebuchadnezzar, in contrast, this is another famous instance in the Old Testament. We've referenced the Nebuchadnezzar episode in Daniel 2 as well, but that's another famous dream interpreting episode in the Old Testament. But remember, Nebuchadnezzar, he was willing to, I have the wording on here, to toy with his magicians and with Daniel. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar insisted that they reveal to him not only the interpretation, but first the dream's content. Do you remember that? If you know how to interpret dreams, that's okay, but I'm not going to believe, you can make anything up. You tell me what my dream is and its interpretation. Okay, but we don't have that here. We don't have that in this instance, not with Pharaoh. He blurts it out, provides recapitulation, commentary, and novel information. It all sounds more like a nightmare than a dream. The worst features of Pharaoh's problems are the helpless magicians who are useless. Pharaoh keys in on this idea, and no one can help me. I'm not getting any assistance. There's no guide. There's no interpreter. And for Pharaoh, that's the most frustrating thing. The discrepancies, it's always interesting to compare the narrator's account of the dreams and then Pharaoh's recounting to Joseph of the dream. It's always interesting to note the differences. The discrepancies between the two tellings of the dream show clearly that Pharaoh is very worried. He spends just a little bit of time on those healthy cows, but he really elaborates on those disease-ridden, blighted, you know, gaunt cows. He's most concerned about that part of the dream. And so he's very worried. His anxiety is growing, and this is an unusual state of mind for the Pharaoh God to be in. Joseph, as is his MO, offers a swift interpretation. Again, unlike Daniel, Joseph doesn't, "Lord, give me wisdom." He doesn't offer a prayer. He doesn't ask for wisdom. He just launches into an interpretation very quickly. Automatically, the information is added. What is so frustrating to Pharaoh with all his power, "I can't get this," just comes easily for Joseph. Now we know why, right? Why? Because God is with him. God is with Joseph. So he makes it clear that Pharaoh's dream deals with something God is about to do. 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. That's the interpretation. The concept of a seven-year famine is no hyperbole. We do have biblical tradition and Egyptian texts that contain a tradition of famine years for various reasons. And we have other Ugaritic texts that speak of famines in the land. And this was serious stuff in the ancient world, a famine. What did a famine mean? Well, droughts and crop failure, scarcity of food, starvation, economic depression, commodity inflation, disease and epidemics, war and political unrest. Rarely did a king or prime minister or pharaoh survive in his tenure as leader a famine. A famine usually meant, let's vote that guy out and let's get somebody else in. He's a curse on this land. So famine was a deeply feared national catastrophe. And so this interpretation came, I'm sure, as a mixed message for Pharaoh. I'm glad to know the interpretation, but if you mention famine, that's very serious. And we're going to see as we continue, we'll pick up next time, Joseph is going to offer that suggestion, that plan, that strategic master plan for surviving those 7 years of famine. Well, Joseph has been in prison for 2 years. He's interpreted two dreams for Pharaoh. In so doing, he has fulfilled the role of both interpreter and prophet. His own life, in many ways, patterns that of Egypt to some extent. He has been in his own crisis for 2 years. But this is a reversal chapter, right? Prosperity and promotion will soon replace Joseph's own famine. Just as a reminder, great lessons in the book of Joseph, the life of Joseph, the story of Joseph. We're not finished, but these are things we can learn so far. You know, jealousy can ruin a family relationship. We know that at the story's beginning. Joseph's coat had been stripped, but not his character. One of the things that we're meant to take note of over and over again is the integrity that Joseph models. He's a diligent, productive worker. He's committed and trustworthy. And God is protecting him in the midst of troubles. God is with Joseph, and God is providentially working in the life of Joseph. We learn we must run from sin at all cost, even if it means leaving your coat behind. And then he put on the prison clothes, but then he lays the prison clothes aside, and he's going to put on the mantle of prime minister. He was promoted. He's blessed. This is number 6 here, is what we see happening in chapter 41. And then we'll see as we near the end of the Joseph cycle that he chose forgiveness over resentment. Great lessons to be learned from the life of Joseph. If we can minister to you, if we can pray for you, if we can study the gospel with you, if there's anything we can do to help you spiritually, to help you in your journey of faith, to help you in your relationship with God, this is a good time to make that need known, and we stand ready to help you and invite you to come as we stand and sing.